House will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Barnhart-Berger. Beyer. Beyer-Bonamici. Boone. Boone-Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Buckley-Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Cowan-Dallum. Dingfelder. Dingfelder-Chris Edwards. Chris Edwards-David Edwards. David Edwards-Esquivel. Esquivel-Flores. Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gelzer-Gilliam. Gilliam-Gilman. Gilman-Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Hannah Holvey. Holvey Hunt. Hunt Jensen. Jensen Comp. Comp Kotek. Kotek Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Minnis Morgan. Morgan Nathanson. Nathanson Nelson. Nolan. Nolan Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Roblin Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum Schaffler. Schaffler Scott. Scott Shields. Greg Smith. Greg Smith Patty Smith. Thatcher. Thatcher Tomei. Wisnet. Wisnet Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Barnhart. Beyer. Boone. Cannon. Dingfelder. David Edwards. Esquivel. Galizio. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Kotek. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nolan. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Greg Smith. Thatcher. Wisnet. Excused. Berger. Butler. Flores. Crummel.
quorum.
Colleagues, when we recessed, we were under third reading of House bills. The chair asks for unanimous consent to temporarily return to propositions and motions. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate concurrent resolution number 4 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, May 17, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This returns us to the third reading of House bills, and the clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2112 relating to construction contractors.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2112A. Representative Hulvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to bring House Bill 2112 to the floor from the House Committee on Consumer Protection, where it unanimously received a due pass recommendation. House Bill 2112 provides warranty protections and requirements that are consistent with those in House Bill 2657 for other residential structures. Colleagues, House Bill 2657 was a bill that was brought from the Construction Claims Task Force, which we have not seen on this floor. It is in Ways and Means. And in the definition of those residential structures, zero lot line dwellings were not included. And so this bill was meant to address zero lot lines, to bring them into, synthesis with House Bill 2657, which basically requires the contractor, when they present a contract for a structure, that they at least offer a warranty. They're able to opt out of that warranty in the bill, but we just wanted to make sure that that warranty was offered on these sorts of structures as well. And colleagues, this is a good bill as evidenced by the vote in the committee, and I recommend an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Representative Butler, your arm.
Representative Nelson, would you like to speak for Representative Butler? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know if I have to, but just to cover my bases, I want to declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict.
I'm a licensed contractor in the state of Oregon.
It is duly noted. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also would like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state it.
Hold a general contractor's license.
Duly noted. Representative Thatcher.
Hi.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
Thank you. Oh, save me some words here. Yeah, I have a company registered with the CCB.
It is duly noted. Representative Boone.
Ditto. I am a part owner in a construction company. So
it is noted for the record.
Conflict. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Hulvey, would you like to close?
Thank you. No, Mr. Speaker. I'll quit while I'm ahead.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. House Bill 2112A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2466, relating to photo radar.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2466A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you today House Bill 2466, dealing with photo radar. This bill comes to you from your Transportation Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. This bill has three distinct components. Thank you. Section 1 adds the cities of Gladstone, Oregon City, and Milwaukee to the list of communities authorized to use photo radar for traffic enforcement. Growth in these communities and in the surrounding areas has made increased traffic and speed a major problem.
Colleagues, it is still pretty noisy on the floor. If folks could give Representative Tomei their attention, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. City officials have asked to join other cities to be allowed to use photo radar to slow traffic and increase safety on the roads. Regulations specify that photo radar in these communities may not be used for more than 4 hours per day in any one location and may not be used unless a sign is posted announcing that photo radar is in use. Regular evaluations must be presented to the legislature describing the effect on traffic safety, the degree of public acceptance, and the process of administration. Section 1 also contains a new provision about the placement of photo radar warning signs. On page 2, line 6, we've added the additional provision that the signs must be placed at least 2 feet above ground level to increase visibility. This is thanks to Representative John Lim. The remaining part of the bill authorizes the Department of Transportation to operate photo radar in highway work zones. Colleagues, I want to call your attention to a newspaper article that appeared in the Oregonian just last Sunday. It says, police time driver at 101 miles per hour in a work zone on Interstate 205. Colleagues, that work zone was posted at 55 miles an hour. Workers were working in that work zone. A police officer from West Lynn said, there are workers on the side of the roads as well as restricted lane widths, and this car just flew by them all. If you have driven on Interstate 205 when they're working, that was really a frightening prospect. Speeding in work zones is a very serious problem which endangers not just the workers but also other vehicles. The last 5 years in Oregon have averaged 9 traffic fatalities in work zones. Photo radar can be a valuable tool to increase safety. ODOT has worked very hard to address the committee's concerns about the actual operation of these systems. These photo radar sites may operate in work zones on state highways, but not on the interstate. There must be appropriate notification sign. There must be a readout device displaying a driver's actual speed within 150 feet of the location. The photo radar unit must be operated from a marked police vehicle by a uniformed police officer. And the bill details the citation and appeals procedures. In addition, the bill requires regular evaluation and reports to the legislature on the effectiveness of this system by March of each legislative year. Colleagues, this is a pilot program and will need to be reauthorized by the year 2013. Thank you. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Question of the carrier, please.
And the carrier yields.
Question of the carrier. Carrier yields. Please go ahead.
Thank you. You pointed out that interstate highways were exempted. What was the reason for that?
There was some... Thank you for that question, good representative. There were some questions about it being on the interstate, so we wanted to start out the first pilot program not on the interstate.
Okay. Thank you. To the
You're
bill.
Welcome.
To the bill.
Let me tell you, I've got a lot of workers out on the highway and on interstate highways, and the only only thing that could slow them down, it's traffic, that is, slows traffic down consistently, is a black and white car with red and blue lights. That is it. You could have an endless number of flaggers out there telling people to slow down, blow right past you. This will be effective in saving lives in work zones. I really believe that. I just hope that we can have a successful pilot program and that you'll all support it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as you, to the bill.
To the bill.
As you may know, this is my name, it's the only name in the bill. And it started out to help the people before the photo radar, and there should be a distinct sign, photo radar ahead. That was the beginning of my bill. Now I got the three gadflies on my back. I couldn't get them off. Three cities, you know, piggybacked on my bill. I'm not quite appreciate that, but I have to live with it, because I have my baby in the bill, and so that's the situation I'm in. I don't, as you may know, that I'm responsible, 1995, as a vice chair of transportation in the Senate, I was responsible bringing photo radar bill to the state. They were going to come to Portland and also the Gresham. And I said, as long as if you want to bring the Gresham, then bill is dead. And they changed it to the Beaverton. So I'm glad I don't have a photo radar in my district. As long as I'm a state representative, chances are it's not going to come to my district. I can vouch for you for that. But it went to the Portland, and Beaverton has been working well. But this photo radar bill is a good thing, but sometimes there's a photo radar can speed it out the ticket more than 60 ticket in a minute in case if it goes so fast. This is not the best. And then, you know, even though I don't like this three cities expanding on top of seven cities already we have, but since I have that the section in here I like, which is currently they have a small sign laid down on the ground, maybe a 45 degree angle, and most of the drivers cannot see it. My bill shows at least 2 feet above the ground to make sure it's visible to the drivers. That was the beginning. But even though I'm not quite comfortable expanding more cities of this photo radar, because of my baby in it, I'm going to willing to support it. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we've used this process in Medford for quite some time. It's very effective. The good part about it is that an officer can sit there, issue citations without ever moving that vehicle. About 2 weeks to 3 weeks, you get a gift certificate via mail, and it shows your picture, it shows your vehicle, it shows your license plate number, and it also shows your speed. The first trial that happened in Medford, the lady came in, looked at it, saw her picture there in the windshield, and pleaded guilty. Does work. Good bill.
See, no further discussion. Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Not at this time, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes no. Representative Gilliam? votes aye. House Bill 2466A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2564, relating to measurement of water use and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2564A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, welcome to House Bill 2564, the bill you've been waiting for now anxiously for the entire session. Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2564 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Jensen. Representative, under the rules of the House, comments are not allowed to proceed a motion, but I'm going to ask for unanimous consent of the House to accept, to suspend the rules and accept your motion as you stated it. Is there any objection? Hearing none, accept. Please restate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 2564 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 2564 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill at a last moment came up with a fiscal that was not apparent to the committee when we were working the bill in committee. The agency in question on the bill that turned in an $80,000 fiscal had attended all of the meetings and all of the work sessions that we had been through and never indicated there would be a fiscal attached to it. Only after it gets ready to excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Only after we were ready to move it out did they come forth with an $80,000 fiscal, and we respectfully ask it go to the Committee on Ways and Means to resolve that issue.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 2564 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2564 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2628, relating to lighting fixtures.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2628A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I've been hearing that there is a rural-urban divide in this state, and this bill comes to you with my recognition of that divide and the sense that I'm on the wrong side of it, being an urban person. This bill came about, I was on the beach one night. It was a moonlit night, and I looked up, and it transported me immediately back to my childhood. There were stars in the sky, thousands and thousands of stars, and I could see them. And I realized that living most of my life in an urban area, I don't see those stars. So what you have is this bill. And this bill is to try and move us toward a time when we can save a tremendous amount of money in our energy costs, and also return to the people of urban areas the stars, the ability to see the Milky Way and those thousands and thousands of millions and billions of stars that are up there. We do need to get light onto urban spaces, onto parking lots, onto industrial work sites, onto agricultural work sites, But the problem now is we want to illuminate one of these work sites. We put up big omnidirectional lights that send the light every which way. And furthermore, in order to make sure it's nice and bright on that parking lot, we put too much light on the ground, which means we've not only wasted energy, but we're bouncing light up into the sky, creating a tremendous amount of glare. I was at my daughter's house one day and noticed a church parking lot, and went home, which is probably 5 air miles away. We live at 1,200 feet, and looked out and saw that parking lot well lit from 5 air miles away. Completely odd. So we started banging around looking for ways to help solve this problem. Because if you create unidirectional rather than omnidirectional light, and you create the right amount of light to light the field that you want to light, but not enough so that it bounces back up in the sky, you can save at least 50% of the energy. There are several Oregon cities now that have discovered that and are now beginning to use these ordinances to save energy costs in their cities. But what we found out is there is an organization called the International Dark Sky Association, and they've been working with the Illuminating Engineering Society of North America to create a set of model outdoor lighting ordinances. And they expect to have that work done soon, and it turns out the Department of Energy is very interested in that work that's going on. These are both, these are the groups that really understand the outdoor lighting situation. So what this bill basically does is it requires the Department of Energy to conduct a study of the ordinance upon its release and to make recommendations about its use in Oregon. And that those recommendations relate to several things. How relevant is the model ordinance? Is it suitable for technical regulations? Is it expected to be effective? You can see those all on the second page of the bill. The Department of Energy is very anxious to do this. They built it into their work plan, so there's no fiscal involvement with it. They'll report back to the governor and to the legislature to our next session about how we may need to change the statutes. And I would urge you to support this bill and to support some reduction in the urban-rural divide for this state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Shuffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Thank you. I was discussing this with my friend from Portland, and when I was on city council in Happy Valley, we put into our building code ordinance a code that would demand that new development install directional lighting. And when you look across the happiest of valleys in Oregon, from my deck, you can see the difference between the developments that were not built underneath this code and those that have been. And the glare difference is tremendously different. And it's much nicer and more pleasant to see that dark sky on a nice evening out on my deck having a nice libation and smoking a cigar rather than that glare shining up from the happiest of valleys. So this is a great bill. I strongly urge your eye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I also urge your eye vote on House Bill 2628. To the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the good representative from House District 33 mentioned, light pollution not only wastes energy and dims our view of the beautiful night sky, but it also contributes to serious public safety concerns. I have a very urban district, and things like improperly shielded lighting can dazzle motorists and pedestrians, leading to unsafe roadway conditions. Additionally, glaring lights increase the contrast between lit and unlit areas, creating deeper, more impenetrable shadows, areas in which crimes, particularly crimes against pedestrians, are more easily carried out. So reducing light pollution is a simple action we can take to not only conserve energy and preserve natural beauty, but make our streets safer. And I urge your aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Seeing no further colleagues in the queue for discussion, Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Rosenbaum votes aye. Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Olson votes no. And Representative Cameron votes aye. House Bill 2628A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill. Chair requests unanimous consent. The consideration of House Bill 2760 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business. The special committee reports on Thursday, May 17, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2936 relating to motor vehicles.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2936A. Representative Beyer. Representative Beyer?
Yes, sorry. Colleagues, House Bill 2936 is a bill that came out of the Transportation Committee. It appeared to be two orphans in our committee that were looking for a home, and so we found them a home. It addresses two issues. First, ensuring fairness by charging the same registration fee for similar vehicles. And second, increasing road safety by providing an incentive for trucks with oversized loads to hire a pilot car. Regarding the first issue, under current law, vans may be registered as either passenger vehicles or motorhomes. The distinction is whether the van has built-in sleeping and cooking capacity. However, the Division of Motor Vehicles testified that no inspection is made of the vehicle to determine whether the van being registered has such capacity. The requester has been registering his van properly as a motorhome, but is aware of others who register similar vans at a lower passenger vehicle rate. The Department of Parks and Recreation and counties receive all revenue from motorhome registration fees for park operation and maintenance. The Transportation Committee amended the bill so that the motorhomes are still paying $750 for each foot of length beyond 10 feet, so that funding available for parks is not significantly affected. House Bill 2936A also encourages trucks to hire pilot cars when appropriate. Pilot cars have provided increased road safety by guiding trucks with a size and weight variance limit. At current prices, it is less expensive for a truck owner to pay the Class D traffic violation of $90 rather than to hire pilot cars. At the request of the Oregon Trucking Association, the bill increases the penalty to a Class A traffic violation with a fine of up to $720, thereby making it less expensive for a truck owner to hire a pilot car as a safety measure. This bill comes to you from the Transportation Committee with all members present voting yes, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Carrier yields.
We were just talking here a little bit ago, Representative. I'm just kind of, I understand the first portion of the bill that increases the $7.50 per foot over 10 feet. My question is, what was the rationale for going from a Class D to a Class A traffic infraction? Because I was busy. From the $90 to the $720.
Thank you, Representative. The justification for doing it in committee was to encourage the use of pilot cars and make sure that the penalty was high enough that these operators would go ahead and hire these pilot cars.
Okay. Thank you. Follow-up question?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Also, we were talking a little bit about the issue where this bill discusses the issue for weights and applying that toward the Class A traffic infraction for violation of being overweight. How does that impact the formula that's used in regards to the bail amount for the number of axles, and like for a single axle and per rubber of recovery on an axle.
Thank you, Representative. To be perfectly honest, this was not a discussion that we had in committee. I will check with the staff, though. Thank you. It has been pointed out to me that this violation on page 7 of the bill in line 31 says this violation of any provisions of the permit other than weight provisions.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Just wanted to briefly support the bill and really thank the chair. This bill is on behalf of the one of the orphans in the bill is on behalf of one of my constituents who actually works here in the Capitol, and had brought it to me talking about a just odd circumstance related to his particular vehicle that he uses and all the other vehicles that are treated disparately around the state. That was in a bill originally. That bill was needed for other purposes, and I just wanted to thank the chair publicly and the committee for sticking with this, finding a home for this orphan. It's important to 600 and some Oregonians who have those vehicles and would like to be treated fairly.
Further discussion? Representative Byer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those in opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Girard, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Wisnett, votes no. Representative Burley, votes aye. Okay. Representative Gilliam, votes aye. Representative Holvey, votes aye. Representative Schaffler, votes no. House Bill 2936A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2952, relating to financial reporting of prepaid managed care health service organizations contracting with the Department of Human Services.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2952A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2952A, relating to the financial reporting of prepaid managed health care services, comes to you today from your House Committee on Health Care with a unanimous due pass recommendation. As a legislative body, we are working this session to find efficiencies and assure transparency in our health care system. This bill is one more step along the way. Currently, commercial health care insurers are required to file detailed reports with the Oregon Insurance Division. In those reports, they must disclose the salary and the benefits of their top executive officers. However, contractors with the Oregon Health Plan do not. They file financial reports with the Oregon Medical Assistance Programs, but they are not required to spell out the salaries and benefits of their top executive officers. House Bill 2952 requires the insurance contractors with the Oregon Health Plan to file more detailed reports, which must also include information on their three highest executive salary and benefit packages. The issue here, colleagues, is transparency and efficiency. The Oregon Medical Assistance Programs currently requires Oregon Health Plan contractors to file annual reports similar to the commercial insurer version. However, the administrative information contained in those reports is aggregated according to certain categories. It's not detailed enough to determine many specific administrative items like CEO salaries. As legislators, we carefully watch agency administrative dollars. The salaries of these CEOs, colleagues, are taxpayer dollars being spent for administrative purposes, and prudent oversight demands more detailed scrutiny. House Bill 2952 provides an important accountability tool for monitoring Oregon health plan contractors. It's just one more way to assure accountability in our publicly funded health care system. I urge you to join the members of your health care committee and vote aye on House Bill 2952. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
She does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson votes no. Representative Girard votes aye. Representative McPherson votes aye. House Bill 2952A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2961, relating to domestic violence, appropriating money, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2961A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2961, I've called the Domestic Violence Clinic Bill. It comes to you from the House Committee on Revenue, where it received unanimous support via the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. I think we all know that domestic violence is a serious issue in our communities, our state, and even throughout the nation. One of the best ways to combat domestic violence is to have a law school-based clinic where students learn about the impact of domestic violence. This bill imposes a $10 fee to file petitions in response in court's actions for marital annulment, dissolution, or separation. The revenue would be transmitted by the courts to the Domestic Violence Clinical Legal Education account for the use of higher education in a grant program to accredited institutions. Currently, there are three universities that would be eligible for the program: University of Oregon, Willamette University, and Lewis and Clark College. Under the supervision of an attorney, law students in domestic violence clinics provide civil legal services to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. Law students gain experience while serving the community. Survivors obtain access to legal representation and protection. Graduates of the program often continue to serve Oregon as prosecutors, legal aid attorneys, and provide attorneys trained in the importance of pro bono service. Training lawyers in domestic violence benefits the entire state. Only 23% of physically assaulted women and 18% of sexually assaulted women who reported the incidents to law enforcement obtain a restraining order. Yet a restraining order is one of the most effective ways of stopping the cycle of violence. Economists Amy Farmer and Jill Tinfeller, don't ask me to say that again, found that the provision of legal services significantly lowers the incidence of domestic violence. This bill makes sense because when you drag an abuser into court, suddenly he or she is before a judge that changes the power dynamics. And I can share from you from experience how many times I've responded to a scene that had a potential domestic violent incident, and there was nothing there that you could do until all of a sudden you found through the law enforcement data system that, in fact, there was a restraining order. So that took care of that problem. Oregon would join six other states that impose a fee on filing for divorce in the order to pay for domestic violence services. And those states are Florida at $55, Iowa at $50, Idaho at $20, Montana is at $49, Ohio is at $32, and West Virginia $72. The fee would not be assessed against low-income filers, as fee waivers are available for the indigent. Legislative Fiscal Office reported there are approximately 36,500 relevant petitions and appearances each year. The total cost of filing for divorce varies by county, ranging from $195 to $371. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2961A. This particular clinical program did not exist when I was in law school, but other clinical programs do. Typically, law students don't participate in these clinics until they're in at least their second and usually their third years of law school. And, colleagues, this is money well spent. They are working under the supervision of attorneys, and they're basically working for free, providing legal services under the supervision of an attorney. So this is a good investment for a good cause. Please vote aye.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2961.
To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill will provide funds to train law students, has been pointed out at all three Oregon law schools. But I want to focus just a few minutes on the model program at the University of Oregon School of Law and why this bill is so critical for literally thousands of Oregonians. Cheryl O'Neill is the executive director of Women's Space, a nonprofit service provider to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. She wrote, "The domestic violence clinic provides real hope for survivors struggling to free themselves and their children from abuse. It is a model program building on years of work creating collaborations and working partnerships with various segments of the family law system. I have presented on this program to both national and international conferences on domestic violence. Colleagues, among the community organizations that have recognized the essential service that Domestic Violence Clinic provides are Christians Addressing Family Abuse, Temple Beth Israel, and multiple law enforcement agencies. Oregon's Senators Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith, along with Representative Peter DeFazio, called the clinic invaluable to low-income victims of domestic violence, stalking, and sexual assault. Too often today in courtrooms all across this state, a battered woman faces her abuser without the critical legal assistance she needs. As reported by Ms. O'Neill, each appearance in court is another time that a survivor must face their abusive partner. It is overwhelming and leads many survivors to drop protective orders rather than be faced with confronting their abuser directly. When a low-income survivor enters this program, she receives the help of a law student supervised by an attorney and an advocate from a nonprofit service provider with the expertise in domestic violence. This collaboration allows an expert from a nonprofit service provider to perform victim counseling services and student training. This is the model which is so successful, colleagues, and the future of this critical program is in jeopardy. This clinic's primary source of funding is a federal grant awarded from the United States Department of Justice, Violence Against Women Office. It is due to expire well before this body convenes for the next biennium. The Department of Justice has employed various strategies for weaning the domestic violence clinic off of federal funds, including terminating the clinic's funding altogether for 1 year and funding only half of its budget in the last cycle. The dean of the U of O Law School writes, "Without a source of funding, the school cannot sustain the DV clinic. We are trying to raise private funds and have invested considerable efforts toward that end. We do not expect that we will come anywhere close to the operating funds needed. Temporary grants have filled in the gaps, including a one-time emergency award from the Oregon Department of Justice. However, this program desperately needs the stability provided by House Bill 2961. It should be noted, colleagues, that funding from House Bill 2961 should be sufficient to keep the domestic violence clinic doors open, but it would not eliminate the need to apply for additional federal and private funding. I want to close with one point. This should neither be a women's issue nor a men's issue.
As decent human beings, and certainly as leaders of this state, colleagues, we should make this a human issue. As Oregonians, we should use our vote to speak up, to speak out, and do our part to end domestic violence. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just will quickly repeat a message
to the bill.
Thank you, to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A message that I had earlier this week when we passed another important piece along the way of fighting domestic violence, and that is this. Remember, this bill alone will not fix this problem. But this is yet another way to attack the problem, and I join my friend from Albany who spoke to this bill and is carrying it. Domestic violence is out of control in our state and our country, and this is a particularly interesting and creative approach that I like because of the partners that it brings on board, and I'll be voting aye.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Call of the House from Representative Barnhart. He is joined by Representative Smith, Representative Holvey, Representative Gelser, Representative McPherson, and Representative Riley. Doorkeeper will bar the door. Sergeant Arms at 10. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Burley Butler. Cameron. Cameron Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. David Edwards Esquivel. Flores. Flores Galizio. Galizio Garrard. Garrard Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Hannah Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Morgan Nathanson. Nathanson Nelson. Nolan. Nolan Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Burley. David Edwards.
Burley's here. He's in the phone.
Galizio. Garrard. Hannah. Morgan. Nathanson. Nolan. Shields. Excuse not subject to the call. Berger. Butler. Flores. Jensen. Crummel.
All members are present. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll. We'll open the voting system. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Scott votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Richardson votes no. Representative Maurer votes aye. Representative Thatcher, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to change my aye vote to no.
Representative Thatcher changes her vote from aye to no. Did I catch that right? Yes. House Bill 2961A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3082, relating to registration fees for vehicles imposed by county.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3082. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3082 comes to 3082A comes from your House Transportation Committee. We have all heard from our counties and our districts and our constituents about the huge transportation backlogs, backlog in maintenance, backlog in the need for modernization, and the real frustration. And it's true in slow growth counties, it's true in high growth counties, it's true in urban, suburban, and rural counties. It's probably doubly true in the timber-dependent counties, which we've heard so much about, the plight that they are under with the county timber payments in jeopardy. We had hoped that there was going to be a permanent solution to county timber payments, but every day and every week it's looking less and less likely that that will be true. The longevity of the solution seemed to get shorter in D.C. as they're now proposing just a one-year fix. And the certainty of that gets less and less every day as vetoes are discussed and bills are going back and forth with different versions in D.C. One thing is clear, though, that our counties, our local governments, are in huge need for transportation funding, both by the raw need and by the lack of resources they have. House Bill 3082 gives them one tool. It does not solve the problem for them, but it gives them one tool. By removing the preemption that we have right now, removing the prohibition that we have currently on county boards of commissioners being able to add a vehicle registration fee. That wouldn't be a vehicle registration fee for county services. That would be a vehicle registration fee specifically for roads. And there are strict prohibitions in state statute already as to how high of a vehicle registration fee they could impose. So this is not a solution to the transportation problem, but it is definitely one tool that we can give to counties to enable them to be able to address their needs, whether that's the needs in timber counties that are going through devastation right now, or needs in all counties that are facing maintenance needs and needs for modernization. With that, I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3082A.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to support this bill. We did a tour of the timber counties, Josephine, Douglas, Coos, Curry, and a few others a while back. And one of the things we heard very loud and clear is that those folks need some tools to keep their counties running. And I think this is just a drop in the bucket, but it's a very important drop. So I urge your aye vote on this, and thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Be happy to yield?
He yields.
Thank you. There's nothing right now that would prohibit a county from presenting this to a voter right now, put it on the ballot, is there?
No, there is not, correct.
Okay, so follow up.
I'd be happy to yield.
Additional question to the carrier yields?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
I forgot I was going to ask. So essentially all we're doing here is just removing the part of the statute that requires them to submit it to the electors of the county for their approval.
All this bill would do would remove that one sentence that's listed in the bill in lines 10 through 12. That there, by removing that sentence, a county board of commissioners would therefore be able to enact a vehicle registration fee within the limits set by the state. Very much like they already have the authority to do a whole wide range of other fees. For some reason, there is a state statutory prohibition on them imposing this one fee. So this would equate it to the others that they currently have before them.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
I guess I just don't agree with removing options like that for the voters to decide, and I will be voting no.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Yesterday, I authored a letter to the president.
To the bill.
To the bill, thank you. And excuse me. I authored a letter to the president. And that is a serious step to take. And I would not have taken that step if some of my counties were not facing bankruptcy. I have yet to vote, to take a vote away from the people. But when I think of the county commissioners that I work with, I have great faith in them. They feel the same as I do. I must give them the tools that I can. I ask for your support on this bill.
See no further discussion, or Senator Hunt, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the good representative from the Dalles put it well. This is not going to be Multnomah County commissioners imposing their action on Clackamas County citizens or Wasco County commissioners imposing their will on Lane County voters. This is going to be our own county commissioners. Who are going to go through the same public process they have to go through on any other action they would take. And again, if you look at the actions we're likely to take this session related to transportation funding, I wish that we were going to come up with a transportation package this session. I think the likelihood of that is probably very slim. That being true, this may well be the only bill that we pass this session that enables counties to begin to address their transportation funding issues. Transportation funding to resolve the huge maintenance issues they're dealing with, transportation funding to resolve the congestion issues they're dealing with, to resolve the modernization issues they're dealing with, and to resolve the loss of federal timber payments. I urge your support, and Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request, since the Ways and Means folks have left again, a call of the House.
Representative Hunt requests a call of the House. He is joined by Representatives Greenlick, Representative Riley, Representative Richardson, Representative Barnhart, and Representative Roblin. Dorky will bar the door. Sergeant Arms of 10, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon, Cannon Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Galizio Garrard, Garrard Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Hannah Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Kampf, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Morgan Nathanson, Nathanson Nelson, Nolan, Nolan Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Schaffler Scott. Shields. Shields Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Galizio. Garrard. Hannah. Morgan. Nathanson. Nolan. Schaffler. Shields. Excused. Not subject to the call. Berger. Butler. Flores. Jensen. Crummel.
All members are present. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? He votes no. Representative Gilliam votes no. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Barker votes aye. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes no. Representative Boquist votes aye. Representative Bruhn votes no. And Representative David Edwards votes no. House Bill 3082A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3093, relating to long-term care facilities.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3093A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3093 comes to you from your House Committee on Health Care, and the bill was introduced at the request of Parkinson's Resources of Oregon, United Seniors of Oregon, and the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens. This really is a very simple bill. This is about ensuring that our loved ones and ourselves, eventually, if we go into a long-term care facility, a skilled nursing facility, that we have access to the appropriate care that we need. What this does is it creates a Bill of Rights, or it adds to the Bill of Rights that are available to individuals who are residents of these facilities. And it adds two specific provisions. The first is that an individual that is living in one of these nursing facilities has, as a right, access to an appropriate specialized diet. As you know, certain conditions require specific kinds of foods, and the health of these individuals really is dependent upon having access to appropriate food. The other is that individuals who are living in these skilled nursing facilities will receive care from individuals who have been trained in that specific condition. We heard testimony in particular from advocates for individuals with Parkinson's disease about some of the specific issues around mobility, diet, medication, and how very important it is for people who are doing that caregiving to have an understanding of that condition. Colleagues, this is a simple bill that will improve the safety and quality of life of our loved ones who are living in skilled nursing facilities, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those opinion bill should pass. Vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3093A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bill be carried over to its proper place on tomorrow's third reading calendar. The carrier is excused for business of the House. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3336, relating to death penalty and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3336A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, I move House Bill 3336 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Gelser moves that House Bill 3336 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3336 is actually a very important bill which will help guide the state in its prosecution of individuals with mental retardation who are eligible for the death penalty. The Supreme Court recently ruled that it is unconstitutional to execute a person that has mental retardation. However, there are many questions remaining about how to implement that. House Bill 3336 would create a task force of four people in order to come back with policy suggestions. During the Judiciary Committee, where this bill passed unanimously, the Department of Justice indicated that they could absorb the cost of this four-person committee in the course of their budget. However, there were several others of these, and so the Legislative Fiscal Office has determined that we should send it to Ways and Means just so that Ways and Means has the opportunity to look at the impact on the DOJ budget.
Further discussion? Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3336 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no.
The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 3336 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3395, relating to eligibility for unemployment insurance based on part-time or temporary work.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3395A. Representative Lim.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. This is another one. And Madam Speaker, I move House Bill 3395 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Lim moves that House Bill 3395 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Madam Speaker and members, we have $708,000 and $51 million. This is a budgetary impact on Employment Department budget, so that this should be referred to the Ways and Means. And also, the Legislative Fiscal Office believes that the measure warrants subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means, so which I agree, and this is this should go to the Ways and Means and scrutinize what's happening.
Further discussion? Representative Lynn, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3395 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye, and those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 3395A is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions be carried over to their proper place on the Thursday, May 17, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 384 be made a special order of business on tomorrow's third reading calendar. Right after the special committee reports on tomorrow's agenda. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading calendar be carried over to their proper place on tomorrow, Thursday, May 17th, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Right. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to first reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Messages from the Senate.
Madam Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bills 808, House Bills 2700, 5015, 5027, 5028, 5029, 5030, 2053, 2074, 2092, 2154, 2169, adopted HCR 7, HGM 22, passed the following House Bill as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2097, concurred in House Amendments and repassed Senate Bill 74. Senate Bill 508 relating to exclusive farm use zones. Senate Bill 725 relating to housing discrimination. Senate Bill 808 relating to local budgets and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. The Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of second reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Senate Bill 131 relating to restitution, Senate Bill 176 relating to reorganized business entities and prescribing an effective date, Senate Bill 215 relating to student admission and declaring an emergency, Senate Bill 261 relating to post-secondary instructional materials and declaring an emergency, Senate Bill 264 relating to reporting abuse of persons with developmental disabilities, Senate Bill 501 relating to judgment, Senate Bill 554 relating to public records, Senate Bill 625 relating to sale of county land by private sale, Senate Bill 641 relating to hunting and declaring an emergency, Senate Bill 716 relating to parking for persons with disabilities, Senate Bill 829 relating to light rail, Senate Bill 967 relating to statutory created legislative committees. Senate Bill 985 relating to post-conviction relief and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to remind my colleagues that we will be gathering in the fourth floor conference room, those that want to share some time remembering Max Sumner.
Further announcements? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request rules be suspended and Representative Chris Edwards be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2961. Will not change the outcome of the vote.
Representative Scott requests unanimous consent that Representative Chris Edwards be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2961. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Chris Edwards, House Bill 2961, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
He votes aye. Further announcements? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Garrard be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 3541. It will not change the outcome.
3541?
Since, well, let me do as the first one. Maybe he'll come up here in the next 60 seconds. Madam Speaker, I request unanimous consent that Representative Girard be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2628. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that Representative Girard be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2628. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. House Bill 2628. Representative Girard, how do you vote?
No.
He votes no. Further announcements? House will stand at ease for a moment.
Right. Madam Speaker.
Never mind.
Although Representative Girard has offered to vote for him since they all get confused with each other anyway, I don't think the clerk would have a heart attack if we did that, so I withdraw my unanimous consent request.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Further announcements? Remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Barnhart, 10 a.m. Thursday, May 17th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House stand adjourned until 10 a.m. May 17th, 2007.
Representative Barnhart moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Thursday, May 17th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.
I talked with Len Holmquist for about 20 minutes. He said he's asked Paul to run a 0.25 light with a $5,000 debt.
That doesn't make
sense. The point is, if you add that to the $100 or the $135, together they raise about $75.
And we're only going to tax small business.
Under that plan, we would.
He represents the big guy.
I know. No, Glenn, you're going to miss.